someone who will not feel put in the middle between you and the BP in your life. Don't take BPD behavior personally. A woman who found out that her borderline husband had been having an affair asked us, "How can I not take it personally when my husband says he has been unfaithful and lying about it for the duration of our marriage? Am I supposed to feel good when he tells me he's going to leave me for her?" We explained that there is a big difference between working through your grief and not taking things personally. Imagine you were planning to have your wedding reception at the nicest hall in town, but 2 days before the wedding, lightning struck the hall and it burned to the ground. When you tried to find another site, you found that every other hall was booked. Naturally, you would be very upset and angry, but you wouldn't feel personally attacked, as if the lightning bolt knew you and was deliberately trying to make your life miserable. You wouldn't blame yourself for things beyond your control. But that is precisely what many people do when faced with the actions of a person with BPD. They spend years assuming they're the source of the lightning, when, in fact, they're only the lightning rod. Keep a sense of humor. Many family members find that having a sense of humor helps. Hank, non-BP. It was October, and my BP wife and I were going to a Halloween party given by my friend Buck. I was dressed as Charlie Brown, complete with striped shirt and stuffed beagle. She was Lucy. In one hand, she carried a football, and in the other, a sign that said, "Psychiatric advice, 5 cents." Ironic, isn't it? Buck opened the door, and a terrible realization came over me. This was not a Halloween party. Everyone else had on sweaters and jeans. The three of us, me, my wife, and her friend, all realized my mistake at exactly the same time. My wife immediately became very angry and started carrying on about how stupid I was. Ordinarily, I would react to her rages and verbal abuse with fear, anxiety, and confusion. This time I just couldn't stop laughing. While my wife raged, the two of us just cracked up. I thought about the episode the next time my wife lost it, and it made me feel better to realize I had a choice about how I was going to react. Take care of yourself. The person in your life with BPD didn't ask to have the disorder, and you never asked for someone in your life to have BPD. But if you are a typical non-BP, you have taken on a huge chunk of the blame for the other person's problems, and you probably feel that you, and only you, can solve them. Many non-BPs, especially those who have chosen their relationship with the borderline, go through life trying to fix things for other people and rescue them. This gives them the illusion that they can change someone else. But it is just a fantasy that shifts responsibility away from the only person who has the power to change the borderline's life, the BP. You can spend 24 hours a day feeling your loved one's pain for him or her, put your life on hold waiting for the BP to come around to your way of thinking, let your entire emotional life be dictated by the mood of the moment. But none of that will help the person with BPD. In our interview with Howard I. Weinberg, Ph.D., he said, "People with BPD need their friends and family members to be stable and clear, not to reject them and not to smother them. They need you to let them take care of themselves and not do things for them that they can do for themselves. The best way to do this and help them is by working on yourself." Patricia, BP. For those of you who have decided to stay with your BPD family member, thank you, thank you. We so need your love and support. We need you to believe in us and encourage us in our recovery. But if you stay, seek therapy for yourself if necessary, and make sure you don't lose yourself in the process. You can't lose your own identity. You must come first. Because if you lose it, then the borderline doesn't really have a supporter. She just has another person in her life with a lot of problems. Detach with love. Some family members practice detaching with love, a concept promoted by Al-Anon, an organization for people whose lives are affected by someone who abuses alcohol. Al-Anon developed a statement about personal limits that is also appropriate for non-BPs if you substitute BPD behavior for alcoholism. The original reads, in part, In Al-Anon, we learn individuals are not responsible for another person's disease or recovery from it. We let go of our obsession with another's behavior and begin to lead happier and more manageable lives, lives with dignity and rights. In Al-Anon, we learn not to suffer because of the actions or reactions of other people, not to allow ourselves to be used or abused by others in the interest of another's recovery, not to do for others what they could do for themselves, not to create a crisis, not to prevent a crisis if it is in the natural course of events. Detachment is neither kind nor unkind. It does not imply judgment or condemnation of the person or situation from which I am detaching. It is simply a means that allows us to separate ourselves from the adverse effects that other person's alcoholism, substitute BPD behavior, has upon our lives. Detachment helps families look at their situations realistically and objectively, thereby making intelligent decisions possible. Take your life back. Don't delay your own happiness. Grab it right now. There are many things you can do today to take your life back. Take some time off to reflect. It can remind both you and the person with BPD that you are two separate individuals. The BP will learn that he can live through a temporary separation and that you will still care about him when you return. Encouraging retreats actually builds the relationship. Do not try to be the person's therapist. That is not your role. If the person with BPD wants that kind of help, suggest that she see a mental health professional. If you no longer have contact with the BP, don't spend hours psychoanalyzing. It is not your job anymore. Actually, it never was to begin with. Memorize the 3 C's and the 3 G's. I didn't cause it. I can't control it. I can't cure it. Get off the BP's back. Get out of the BP's way. Get on with your own life. Be good to yourself. Here are some ideas. Visit an art gallery. Buy an outrageously expensive chocolate truffle. Get a massage. Seek out friends and family. Volunteer or become politically involved. Realize that, illness or no illness, no one person can fulfill all of your needs. If you have let friendships falter, unfalter them. When you go out, do not spend all your time talking about the person with BPD. See a movie. Try a new food. Relax and enjoy yourself. Have fun. The world will not stop if you take some time for yourself. In fact, you will be able to come back refreshed and with a broader perspective. If you are eating or drinking too much or engaging in other unhealthy coping mechanisms, stop. Seek professional help if you need to. Maintain realistic expectations. Borderline behavior takes years to develop. It is ingrained. Don't expect miracles. Celebrate small steps in the right direction and appreciate the things you enjoy about the person with BPD. Tanya, non-BP. It helps to remind myself that I can't fix everything. I keep reminding myself that being in a situation where I feel helpless doesn't mean I'm a failure. My therapist told me not to feel guilty about taking care of myself. It's going to take some time to really feel that it's okay. I know I have to deal with my own feelings, but sometimes I long to have my own life back for a little while. Bolster your identity and self-esteem. If the person in your life blames and criticizes you, your self-esteem may be in the gutter. If you had low self-esteem to begin with, the situation may be critical. Some non-BPs we spoke with, especially adult children of borderlines, let others take advantage of them because they felt they didn't deserve better. They stayed in abusive work situations or unknowingly sabotaged themselves as if to confirm the BP's low estimation of their worth. Many people with BPD are able to be supportive of their children and other people in their life, but some are not. If the relationship with the BP in your life is damaging your self-worth, take immediate steps to repair it. Don't depend on the person with BPD to affirm or validate your worth, because she may not be able to. It's not that she doesn't care about you. It's just that at this time, her own issues and needs may be getting in the way. Chapter 6 discusses the issues of setting limits and responding to rage, blame, and criticism. Listen to it carefully and practice the communication techniques with a friend before using them in a real-life situation. You do not have to listen to anyone else tell you that you're an awful, terrible person. You have a choice. Finally, seek therapy to deal with the stress of living with someone who has BPD. In a survey we conducted of non-BPs, 75% of the non-BPs said they had sought therapy themselves. Take responsibility for your own behavior. You may feel like a crumpled newspaper in a tornado, buffeted about at the whim of the person in your life with BPD, but you have more control over the relationship than you probably think you do. You have power over your own actions, and you control your own reactions to troublesome BPD behavior. Once you understand yourself and the decisions you've made in the past, it is easier to make new decisions that may be healthier for you and the relationship in the long run. In Emotional Blackmail, Susan Forward and Donna Fraser discuss how even avoidance is an action taken. Every day we teach people how to treat us by showing them what we will and won't accept, what we refuse to confront, and what we let slide. We may believe that we can make another person's troublesome behavior disappear if we don't make a fuss, but the message we send is, "It worked. Do it again." Some non-BPs find this step of owning up to their own responsibility difficult because they hear the critical voice of the BP in their head saying, "See, everything is your fault. I told you that something is wrong with you." To these non-BPs, taking this step almost seems like agreeing with the BP's criticisms. If this describes you, silence those voices right now. We are not suggesting that you provoked or caused the person's behavior. Rather, we are proposing that you may have unwittingly given the BP permission to repeat behaviors that have worked in the past. Consider how the relationship meets your needs. In our interview with Howard I. Weinberg, Ph.D., he said, "If you care about someone with BPD, remember that you did not choose the borderline because you are sick. You chose this person because they were important to you." You would not be listening to this book if the relationship was completely negative. You would just walk away. So something about the relationship is probably meeting your needs. These reasons may vary depending upon whether you are in a chosen relationship, friend, lover, or unchosen relationship, relative, with someone with BPD. Many people stay in relationships with borderlines because the person with BPD is incredibly interesting, engaging, bright, charming, funny, witty, and alluring. One woman said that when she met her borderline boyfriend, she felt like she was meeting a member of her own species for the first time. Diane, BP. I can understand why non-BPs engage in discussion about the pathologies, the rages, and the rotten things borderlines can do. A BP has the capacity to destroy themselves and anyone close to them. It's healthy to vent this pain. But sometimes, in the course of the books and the discussion and the clinical terminology, these reasons why you began the relationship become lost. You didn't fall in love with a borderline because you had some hankering to be destroyed. You did it because there were good qualities about the person, and they are just as characteristic of the person as the bad ones. When the destructive bad qualities began to manifest themselves, you got through it by telling yourself that in the end, these good qualities supersede the bad ones. Well, maybe they will or maybe they won't. Non-BPs aren't masochists. They're optimists, which may or may not turn out to be warranted. It is hard to give up on that optimism and let go of a relationship that's so good otherwise. Stop making excuses and denying the severity of the situation. Remaining hopeful is essential, and it's true that everyone has good and bad qualities. But hope must be tempered with a realistic view of the situation and an assessment of the likelihood of change. Kevin's girlfriend Judy was bright, talented, and very attractive. Best of all, she loved him. So Kevin overlooked behavior that would have been a wake-up call for others. For example, one day Judy showed up at his workplace and began screaming at him in front of his boss and co-workers. Several days later, he still couldn't figure out why she had been angry. Judy also impulsively bought luxury items like crystal vases and designer clothing, even though she was on public assistance and lived with Kevin and her 9-year-old son in a roach-infested apartment. She would leave her son alone at home to go shopping. Each time Judy and Kevin had a disagreement, she would throw him out of the apartment and destroy some of his possessions. This became so routine that he began leaving his treasured belongings with his parents. When Kevin's friends tried to convince him that Judy's behavior wasn't normal, Kevin would shrug his shoulders and say, "Oh well, nobody's perfect. Every relationship has problems." Kevin is using denial as a way of keeping the relationship going and coping with painful feelings of his own. At this point, Kevin is likely to do anything to avoid conflict in the relationship. However, his denial of problems only enables and reinforces the negative behaviors of Judy. Kevin will need support and perspective of his friends to begin to address these problems and address why he allows Judy to treat him so poorly. Kevin will also need to address why his relationship with Judy is so important that he allows her to treat him badly. Understand the effects of intermittent reinforcement. Let's say that you have a rat in a box with a lever. You teach the rat to press the lever. Every fifth time he presses the lever, he is rewarded with some food. The rat quickly learns to press the lever 5 times so he can claim his reward. But if you stop giving the rat food, he will quickly abandon the exercise. Now let's say that you intermittently reinforce the rat with food. That is, you vary the reward schedule. Sometimes you reward the rat after 2 lever presses. Sometimes you wait until the 15th press. You alternate the reinforcement so he never knows when to expect the food. Then, once more, you take away all the food pellets. But the rat keeps pressing the lever. He presses it 20 times. No food. He presses some more. He thinks, perhaps the human is waiting for the 99th press this time. When a behavior is intermittently reinforced, extinguishing the behavior takes a lot longer once the reward has been removed. Intermittent reinforcement can work both ways. You are intermittently reinforced when the BP is in a good mood. You can't predict when it will occur next, but you know it could be soon. The BP can also be intermittently reinforced when you occasionally cave in to his or her demands. Molly says, "I am caught right now in Sandra's charming behavior. I am thinking, ah, this is the person I used to know. My logic tells me not to reconnect with her, but my emotions are telling me another thing." If you feel addicted to the BP despite his or her harsh treatment of you, consider whether intermittent reinforcement is playing a part in the relationship. Recognize the exhilaration of the roller coaster ride. Many people say that when things are good, they're really good. The flattery, attention, and obsessiveness are exhilarating to the ego. To feel so important to someone can be exciting and empowering. The exhilaration can be recognized immediately, especially if the non-BP has not been in this position of being an idol before. The non-BP may also begin to look for the exhilaration, to anticipate the flattery and attention. And, after a while, when the flattery begins to gradually fade, the non-BP will miss it and make attempts to get the BP to idolize him or her again. The law of intermittent reinforcement applies here again, since the BP may intermittently engage in the obsessiveness and flattery throughout the relationship. This, in turn, reinforces the non-BP's commitment to the relationship. Jim, non-BP. I found my wife's initial obsessiveness with me very flattering. I mean, I never thought I was worth that kind of attention. Other women didn't pay much attention to me, but she worshipped me. It's easier to feel good about myself when I'm around someone who idolizes me. But our relationship was like an addiction. I kept going back for more, in spite of myself, filled with self-contempt and even a sort of subtle shame. I hate myself for loving you. So began our roller coaster relationship. Living vicariously through the sublime, dizzying heights, I was shaken by the sudden, despairing drops, the switchbacks, the topsy-turvy, illogical loops, the stunning stops, and later, the absence, the silence, the flatness at the end. How to get unstuck. Do you feel unable to move because danger lies in every choice, but at the same time feel compelled to do something? Does your satisfaction with this relationship depend on your BP making significant changes, even though it sure hasn't happened yet? The Essential Family Guide to Borderline Personality Disorder, New Tools and Techniques to Stop Walking on Eggshells, by co-author Randy Krieger, lists the 6 most common reasons why non-BPs feel stuck and what to do about them. Unhealthy bonds forged by emotional abuse. Controlling, intimidating, punishing, and isolating behaviors can lead to a lack of motivation, confusion, and difficulty making decisions, all of which can keep people stuck. Feelings of fear. These can range from the practical, will the BP be able to make it alone, to fear of conflict and the unknown. Obligation, roles, and duty. How can I not visit my mother on her birthday? Guilt. This can drive family members, especially parents, to lose their sense of judgment and go to ridiculous lengths to absolve themselves. Low self-esteem. People with low self-esteem often try to relieve their shame by being good. Goodness comes from sacrificing themselves and what they want out of life to make up for their perceived inadequacies. The need to rescue. Rescuers start out with the best of intentions. They want to help. They will often do anything to keep the peace and avoid conflict, including taking the blame for things that are not their fault. Ultimately, they feel manipulated, angry, and frustrated. To get unstuck, you must take a different approach. Stop focusing so much on your family member and take a close look at yourself. Work on becoming more of your own person. Krieger writes, "Own your choices. Recognize that you decide how to respond to the people, actions, and events in your life. You have choices. Not necessarily fun ones, but choices nonetheless. Banish phrases like, 'he made me,' or 'she forced me to,' from your vocabulary, unless they refer to a legal document. Rather than say, 'I have to,' say, 'right now, I choose to.' Then open yourself up to new ideas. If what you've been doing hasn't worked, do something else." Suggestions from the Essential Family Guide include: become more authentic. Act in accordance with your own attitudes and beliefs. Learn from the past. Are these feelings familiar? Have you been in a similar situation? Help others without rescuing. Express confidence in your family member's ability to start finding solutions to his or her own problems. That helps build confidence. Allow people to be who they are instead of what you want them to be. Send healthy support messages like, "I'm here if you need me, but your choices and the consequences belong to you." Make decisions for yourself. Acknowledging that you have the authority to make your own decisions is the first step toward making new choices and changing your life for the better. Some non-BPs think they are helpless in their relationship when, in actuality, they are feeling scared. Fear and anxiety are not the same thing as being helpless. Non-BPs are typically fearful that their efforts toward limit setting and change will be met with rage and anger. Therefore, in an effort to avoid negative reactions of BPs, non-BPs will describe themselves as helpless. Moreover, believing you are helpless may also serve the purpose of ridding yourself of any responsibility for making changes or for creating a better life for yourself. You may think that if you're helpless, that means you're a victim, a person that others can't blame for their situation. You must understand that you do have the power to change your relationships and your life, but it is likely going to be frightening at first. The alternative is to live a fairly unhappy and unsatisfying life in which fear dictates your choices and their relationships. Believe you don't deserve to be treated badly. Do you sometimes think that being in an emotionally abusive relationship is better than being in no relationship at all? It sometimes feels easier to be hurt than to be alone, but in the long run, abusive relationships can cause you to lose yourself, which is the ultimate loneliness. People with self-esteem problems are very vulnerable to blame and criticisms. They come to believe they deserve this treatment. They think that if they leave, no one else will want them. Even emotionally healthy people can begin to question their own self-worth. Alex, non-BP. I had to examine why I would spend years in abusive relationships. I had to overcome my fears and learn that I am worthy of being in relationships with people who are good to me, without putting me on a pedestal or tossing me into the gutter. John, non-BP. I realized that one of the major reasons I stayed in this relationship was that I unconsciously thought I deserved that pain and anguish. Now I'm working on this, so I won't be attracted to women like that in the future. All people, not just non-BPs, have the right to healthy relationships. However, after months or years of enduring excessive criticism, blame, and borderline rage, most non-BPs may begin to question whether they deserve to have a healthy relationship. Do you believe that you have the following rights? To feel respected as a person. To get your physical and emotional needs met. To be appreciated and not taken for granted. To communicate effectively with your partner. To have your privacy respected. To not constantly fight for control. To feel good about yourself and your relationship. To trust, validate, and support each other. To grow within and outside of the relationship. To have your own opinions and thoughts. To either stay in or leave the relationship. As you may know, rights are neither respected nor acknowledged unless someone stands up for them. Are you ready to stand up for your rights? Face your own issues about being needed. Codependence expert Melody Beatty, in Codependent No More, developed a list of questions for people who feel like they must rescue others. Paraphrased, they include, do you feel responsible for other people's thoughts, actions, and feelings? When someone tells you about a problem she has, do you feel it is your duty to solve it? Do you swallow your anger in order to avoid conflict? Do you find getting more difficult than giving? Do you somehow seem to enjoy life more during interpersonal crises? Have you avoided choosing partners whose lives seem to go too smoothly because you become bored? Do people tell you that you are a saint for putting up with something or someone? Does part of you enjoy this? Is it more tempting to concentrate on the problems of others than to solve difficulties in your own life? Focus on your own issues. Some people find that trying to change someone else is easier than changing themselves, and that focusing on the problems of others helps them avoid their own problems. You may want to ask yourself, do you have a firm sense of who you are apart from the person with BPD? Are you where you want to be at this point in your life? Is there anything in your life that you are avoiding that you might have to take a look at if you were not concentrating on your relationship with the BP? How much time do you spend worrying about this relationship? What would you do with that time if life with this person was perfect? Nina, non-BP. Because my boyfriends were so obviously out of line, I overlooked my own behavior. So I learned that my responsibility was to admit when I screwed up immediately, to be honest and open, even in the face of BPD rages and blame. I realized that the problems I faced with BPD partners were magnified versions of the problems I had with myself. I kept thinking it was just those crazy men in my life, and that if only they would change, everything would be fine. It was a painful realization to wake up one day and notice that there were no medals handed out to willing sufferers like me. Where to go from here? Ask yourself, how did I end up in this position? What have I learned about myself? What choices have I made in the past, and are they the best ones for me right now? What is keeping me from standing up for myself? What can I do about it? What am I responsible for in this relationship? What can I do about it? Note that we are not blaming you for what has happened to you in the past or for the choices you've made, but only you, not the BP, your therapist, or your friends, can resolve these issues. It's up to you. Many introspective non-BPs found that what they discovered about themselves was invaluable. Alex, non-BP. This was the greatest gift of being around people with BPD. I got to see myself and how I interact with others. As painful as these relationships were, I needed them to become the person that I am today. Marilyn, non-BP. I have been able to move from being a person who lived her life unconsciously to a person who lives a conscious life. Someone said that the unexamined life is not worth living. I am happy to say that my life is very much worth living. Russell, non-BP. It helps to view situations as opportunities for growth and personal education, rather than see every conflict and tribulation as a crisis of unresolvable proportions. I recognize that I am the one with the problem. I detest this person's behavior, and I'm open to learn more about myself. It becomes more about my choices than about my helplessness, and I can learn a lot from my choices. In this chapter, we've explored ways to better cope with BPD behavior simply by making changes within yourself, accepting that you can't make the BP seek treatment, not taking the BP's actions personally, taking care of yourself, and taking responsibility for your own behavior. Next, we'll look at beginning to change the way you interact with the BP in your life. Chapter 6. Understanding your situation, setting boundaries, and honing skills. Identify triggers to intense emotional reactions. When you or the BP have an intense reaction to something, chances are good that one of your triggers, or hot buttons, has been pushed. Hot buttons, or triggers, are stored up resentments, regrets, insecurities, anger, and fears that hurt when touched and cause automatic emotional responses. By identifying specific actions, words, or events that seem to trigger emotional reactions, either in you or in the BP in your life, these reactions may be easier to anticipate and manage. Keeping track. Many family members find that keeping a daily log of their loved one's patterns of behavior helps them understand and depersonalize the person's actions. Parents of borderline children especially find records useful in helping obtain proper diagnosis and treatment for their child. Whether you simply observe the BP or jot down notes about his or her moods and behaviors, your intent is not to make judgments, but to stop reacting to the behavior emotionally and start learning from it. If there appears to be little relationship between your actions and those of the person with BPD, you will see more clearly that the person's behavior is not about you. If it looks like an external factor triggers the behavior, try to determine what factors might be involved, such as the person's general mood, the person's stress level and/or responsibilities, the time of day, the presence or absence of alcohol, physical factors such as being hungry or tired, the immediate environment. If you can find patterns in the person's behavior, it may become more predictable. Portia, non-BP. Sandy and I are parents of a possibly borderline child. We used a spreadsheet to graph our son's moods and behaviors. The scale varied from negative 10 for extreme despair to positive 10 for extreme optimism. A 0 indicated a neutral mood. Our son's therapist was blown away by our documentation, and it helped the therapist determine if our son had BPD or bipolar disorder. Henry, non-BP. I never kept a journal, but over a 10-year period I realized that Barbara's moods occurred in 6-week cycles. It went like this. 1. Explosive, violent raging that lasted from 10 minutes to several hours. 2. Silence that lasted for 2 to 5 days. 3. Friendly, cheerful, affectionate behavior that would last 3 or 4 days. When things were going well, Barbara would apologize and even ask me to find out what might be causing her crazy behavior. 4. A long deterioration that lasted 4 to 10 weeks. Barbara became increasingly more critical, condemning, and short-tempered. She would deny her earlier apologetic remarks. Finally, there would be an angry explosion, and the cycle would repeat anew. Once I recognized the patterns, I knew what to expect. This made things feel more manageable for me. Non-BP triggers. Many non-BPs told us that the people with BPD in their lives seem to be aware of the non-BP triggers. When the BP felt threatened, they consciously or unconsciously protected themselves from painful feelings in ways that pushed these buttons. For example, one non-BP had very poor self-esteem. She had never dated much, and she and her borderline husband had gotten married during high school. The marriage was very difficult because her husband was emotionally abusive. Whenever she spoke of leaving, however, he would tell her that no one else would have her and she would never be able to support herself because she was not smart or talented enough to get a good-paying job. Some of the things that the BP in your life says or does may sting badly. Others may not bother you. Rather than just reacting, observe and examine your own responses. Is the criticism true, or does it have a grain of truth? Remember, you don't have to accept or reject the statement in its entirety. Look for splitting, black and white thinking, overgeneralizations, you always or you never, and illogical connections, you didn't take me to the party because you hate me. Certain hot buttons get pushed so many times that even the slightest touch becomes painful. Hot buttons for non-BPs may include being unfairly accused by the BP, having needs, feelings, and reactions discounted or denied by the BP, being overly admired or adored by the BP, because it may be a setup for later devaluation and criticism, other situations and conditions that usually precede rages or acting out behaviors. Example given, one woman started trembling whenever the phone rang because she was afraid it was her borderline mother. Fog. Fear, obligation, guilt. In Emotional Blackmail, Susan Forward and Donna Fraser write that traits that make people vulnerable to emotional blackmail include fear, obligation, and guilt. Fog, for short. Fog obscures your choices and limits your options to those the blackmailer picks for you. Fear. You may fear losing something, love, money, approval, access to your children, or the relationship itself. You may be afraid of your own anger or of losing control of your emotions. Obligation. Says Forward, memory, as employed by the blackmailer, becomes the obligation channel, with non-stop replays of the blackmailer's generous behavior toward us. When our sense of obligation is stronger than our sense of self-respect and caring, people quickly learn how to take advantage. Guilt. When your normal activities trigger the BP, the person plays the tag-you're-it game discussed in Chapter 3 and shifts responsibility for her upset feelings onto you. The BP may accuse you not only of devious behavior, but of acting in this way to deliberately hurt her. Instead of questioning her assumptions, you may respond by feeling guilty. Coping strategies. Just becoming aware of your triggers can make coping with borderline behavior easier. Other strategies include working on yourself. For example, the woman with poor self-esteem might see a therapist and explore why she thinks so poorly of herself, or she might take some classes at the local college to improve her professional skills or train for a higher-paying position. This way, she will be in a better position to depersonalize and deflect the BP's criticism or leave the emotionally abusive relationship. Performing reality checks with others. If the BP in your life accuses you of being ungrateful or inept, or of having other negative qualities, ask friends if they believe there's any truth to what the BP is saying. Minimize your exposure to situations that trigger you. You have the right to take care of yourself. Minimize any visible reaction. If the BP knows the button pushing is having the desired effect, whether consciously or unconsciously, chances are that the behavior will be repeated. Realizing you can't control what people choose to think. You can't make everyone happy, least of all someone who is projecting their own unhappiness onto you. Stop taking responsibility for the BP's inner world and start taking responsibility for your own. Determine your personal limits. Personal limits, or boundaries, tell you where you end and where others begin. Limits define who you are, what you believe, how you treat other people, and how you let them treat you. Like the shell of an egg, limits give you form and protect you. Like the rules of a game, they bring order to your life and help you make decisions that benefit you. Healthy limits are somewhat flexible, like a soft piece of plastic. You can bend them, and they don't break. When your limits are overly flexible, however, violations and intrusions can occur. You may take on the feelings and responsibilities of others and lose sight of your own. On the other hand, when your limits are too inflexible, people may view you as cold or distant. That's because inflexible limits can act as a defense, not only against others, but also from your own feelings. You may have a hard time feeling sadness, anger, or other negative emotions. Happiness and other positive emotions may also at times be beyond your grasp. You may feel disconnected from others, and even from your own experiences. In Codependent No More, Melody Beatty says that setting limits is not an isolated process. She writes, "Setting boundaries is about learning to take care of ourselves, no matter what happens, where we go, or who we're with. Boundaries are rooted in our beliefs about what we deserve and don't deserve. Boundaries originate from a deeper sense of our personal rights, especially the right we have to be ourselves. Boundaries emerge as we learn to value, trust, and listen to ourselves. Boundaries naturally flow from our conviction that what we want, need, like, and dislike is important." Personal limits are not about controlling or changing other people's behavior. In fact, they're not about other people at all. They're about you and what you need to do to take care of yourself. For example, you may not be able to stop nosy in-laws from asking you again and again when you plan on starting a family, but you can control whether you answer their questions and how much time you spend with them. Sometimes you may choose to overlook your personal limits. For example, imagine that your elderly father slips on an icy walkway and asks if he can live with you and your family until he recovers from his injuries. Because you love your dad, you say yes, even though you value your privacy. The key here is that you feel you have a choice. It's like the difference between giving someone a gift and being robbed. Emotional limits. Emotional limits are the invisible boundaries that separate your feelings from those of others. These boundaries not only mark off where your feelings end and someone else's begin, but also help you protect your feelings when you are feeling vulnerable and provide others with access to your feelings when you are feeling intimate and safe with them. People with healthy emotional limits understand and respect their own thoughts and feelings. In short, they respect themselves and their own uniqueness. Anne Catherine says, "The right to say no strengthens emotional boundaries. So does the freedom to say yes, respect for feelings, acceptance of differences, and permission for expression." Healthy examples. Here are some illustrations of how people act in ways that respect their own thoughts and feelings. Dan believes that his father has borderline personality disorder. His younger brother, Randy, disagrees. Dan hasn't seen his father in a year, while Randy has dinner with him once a week. Dan and Randy feel free to discuss their opinions about their father, though they have differing viewpoints, and they both enjoy their brotherly relationship, realizing that it's separate from their relationships with their father. Roberta's lover, Kathy, BP, hates it when Roberta, non-BP, goes out with friends. Kathy is always invited along, but she wants to stay home because she thinks that Roberta's friends are a complete waste of time. "Please don't go," Kathy pleads one evening as Roberta gets dressed to go out. "I'm lonely without you," Kathy says tearfully. Roberta gently reminds Kathy that she told her about her plans a week ago and that Kathy had time to find things to do on her own or with one of her own friends. But Kathy just keeps on weeping. "You must not love me anymore," she says. Roberta replies, "It sounds like you feel that I am rejecting or abandoning you. That must be very painful. You can believe that and make yourself feel bad, or you can try to work through why you doubt my love for you. Let's talk about it when I get back. I'll see you at around 11 o'clock. The benefits of personal limits. Limits can be difficult to set and keep, but doing so has some invaluable incentives. Limits help you define who you are. Limits and the struggle for identity are tightly intertwined. People with weak limits often have poorly developed senses of identity. People with weak or non-existent limits can have difficulty distinguishing between their own beliefs and feelings and those belonging to others. They also tend to confuse their problems and responsibilities with those of others. Left with an uncertain identity, they often take on someone else's or identify solely with one familiar role, example given, mother, executive, or even borderline. People with well-defined limits appropriately distinguish themselves from others, identify and take responsibility for their own feelings, beliefs, and values. See feelings, beliefs, and values as important parts of who they are. Have respect for other people's beliefs and feelings, even if they are different from their own. Understand that another person's values and beliefs are equally important in defining who they are. Limits bring order to your life. If you're always at the whim of someone else's desires, your life can spiral out of control. People with BPD tend to change the rules, act impulsively, and demand attention on their schedule, not that of others. Limits can help you deal with these behaviors so that you don't feel like a puppet on a string. Limits can also help you clarify your relationships with others, and setting limits ahead of time may help you avoid future problems. Limits help you feel secure. People who don't have limits are always at the mercy of others. They feel helpless when others act upon them, and they take whatever others dish out. On the other hand, people with limits feel more in control of their lives because they realize they have a choice about the behavior they will tolerate. They take the power that is truly theirs to say no. This provides them with a sense of security and control. For example, Jane and Ben have been dating for several months. Jane's having a hard time because Ben can't decide how he feels about her. When he loves her, she's elated. When he backs off and just wants to be friends, she's depressed and confused. One day, he has something to tell her. "I've met someone else," he says, "but I don't know if she's the one. I want to date both of you until I know for sure." Clear limits will enable Jane to stick up for herself and tell Ben what she wants out of the relationship. Because she has healthy limits, she knows that her needs are just as important as Ben's. Jane can tell Ben how his actions have affected her, and she can evaluate his proposed arrangement based on her own values and beliefs. Jane understands that she has many options. She knows one of them is telling Ben that although she cares for him, she needs to leave the relationship because it's not meeting her needs. Limits promote intimacy, not enmeshment. The idea used to be that when two people got married, they became one. Today's brides and grooms are more likely to believe that one and one still make two. Many couples acknowledge this at their wedding by having someone read from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. In the passage on marriage, Gibran urges couples to have spaces in their togetherness. Stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow. Gibran is describing healthy limits. The opposite, enmeshment, is comparable to the oak tree and the cypress growing so close together that their branches and roots become entwined. Soon, there's no room for either tree to grow. Parts of each tree die, and neither reaches its full potential. Unlike compromise, which is a conscious give and take, enmeshment involves denying who you are or what you need to please someone else. In Boundaries, Where You End and I Begin, Anne Catherine says, "Enmeshment happens when the individualities of each partner are sacrificed to the relationship. Falling in love is exciting and involving, but the truth is, it's a fairly enmeshing stage of the relationship. It is validating for someone to have thoughts and feelings identical to our own. It feels wonderful. Eventually, though, perceptions will differ. How this is handled is critical for the relationship. Sometimes people become enmeshed because one partner intimidates the other into giving up their own opinions, perspectives, and preferences. In other cases, a partner takes on someone else's view voluntarily because they're so eager to feel close to someone. Denying part of themselves is preferable to being alone, at least at first. But the problem with sacrificing parts of yourself to please someone else is that it doesn't work in the long run. It might take many years, but eventually you realize that while you may have gained a relationship, you've lost yourself. In order to share yourself, you need enough of a sense of your own individuality to have something to present to the other. Even if you have a good sense of who you are, intimacy takes time, openness, a non-judgmental attitude, listening, and acceptance. BP and non-BP boundary issues. Some people are lucky enough to have had parents and other role models who taught them about personal rights and limits and why they are important. Unfortunately, many adults grew up with damaged, trampled, or non-existent boundaries. In many cases, parents routinely violated their children's boundaries and rights or forced them into inappropriate roles. Different kinds of boundary violations cause different kinds of problems for children when they become adults. If parents or other caregivers encourage children to be dependent, as adults, those grown children may believe that they need someone else to make them whole. Children of distant or abandoning parents may have a hard time connecting emotionally to others. Controlling parents teach their children that others have no rights. Over-involved parents can make it difficult for their children to develop their own identities. Some people with BPD have experienced childhood sexual or physical abuse, the most horrific violations of personal limits. The abuse, humiliation, and shame can severely damage personal boundaries. Abused children feel confused about what to let others do to them physically, how to let others treat them emotionally, and how to interact with others in socially appropriate ways. Adults who were abused as children may protect themselves by building strong walls between themselves and others, or they may withdraw physically or emotionally, rarely sharing their emotions. Others do the opposite, becoming too open. They may involve themselves in sexual relationships with people who don't really care about them. Children who experience abuse also learn to deny pain and chaos or accept them as normal and proper. They learn that their feelings were wrong or didn't matter. They learn to focus on immediate survival, on not getting abused, and miss out on important developmental stages. As a result, they have problems developing their own identities. Kamala, BP. My mother and father physically, sexually, and emotionally abused me. They never loved me or cared about how I felt, so I never had the opportunity to go through the natural process of individuation and separation. When I became an adult, I walked out into the real world looking and sounding fine, but I had no concept of the other and no boundaries whatsoever. To my underdeveloped sense of self, people around me were extensions of me. I hated and abused myself, so I hated and abused them. When I tried to have normal relationships, other people's boundaries were my worst enemy. People with boundaries could say no. No was a certain death. I could feel it in the pit of my stomach. People saw me as demanding, unendingly chaotic, grabbing, controlling, manipulating others. But it was really the cry of an insatiable, terrorized, wounded little girl, still struggling to grow up and survive. When people don't have healthy limits, they need defenses, which damage intimacy. These defenses can include control, withdrawal, blaming, rationalizing, intellectualizing, name-calling, perfectionism, black-and-white thinking, threats, fighting about false issues, excessive concern for the other. These are all handy ways to avoid feelings and avoid communication, says Anne Catherine in an interview. The healthy alternative is to state your true feelings. Non-BPs can have weak limits too, of course. However, they may be expressed in a different way. Whereas the person with BPD may refuse to take responsibility for his or her own actions and feelings, non-BPs tend to take too much responsibility for what others say and do. This tendency may come from childhood experiences. As children, some non-BPs were expected to act as emotional or physical caretakers for their parents or others. Frequently, they learn to deny their own needs and take on responsibility for other people's feelings, thoughts, and problems. John, non-BP. I was 11 years old when my brother was born. A year later, my twin sisters came along. Money, which had always been tight, became a real problem. When I was in junior high, my job was to come home right after school to look after my siblings and get dinner started. One day, though, I watched the cross-country track team warming up. I wanted to be there, running with them. But when I asked my parents if I could join, my mother cried and said, "We need you here to look after the kids, John. If I quit my job to watch them, we'll have to move to a cheaper apartment." My father got angry. "You're selfish. Can't you think of anyone else for a change?" John's parents discouraged him from seeing his needs as separate from theirs. In order to maintain his parents' love, he had to deny his true feelings. And, as an adult, he continued to deny his feelings because it felt familiar and safer. John also grew up learning that his feelings didn't count, so when he got into a relationship with a BP as an adult, he had difficulty keeping his limits, which he was not practiced in doing. Scripts from the past. Some people with BPD frequently won't accept responsibility, and some non-borderlines accept too much. Unaware that they're replaying painful scripts from the past, the BP tries to persuade the non-BP to become the focus of their pain and rage. Often, non-BPs all too willingly oblige. The bargain that the BP and non-BP strike may be rooted in deep, largely unconscious beliefs about what it takes to survive in this world. For the person with BPD, feeling separated from someone else can be frightening. It makes the BP feel rejected, abandoned, and alone. So, consciously or unconsciously, the BP may discourage independence or independent thinking in people close to him or her. Kamala, BP. Before I got better, if people didn't have any protection in place for themselves, I would aim right at them. Who doesn't want a target that they can sink? But what I was doing, and what a lot of borderlines do, is not a game or a way to get kicks. It's about survival. People who had healthy boundaries in place left me feeling too defective, too out of control, and too vulnerable. In response, many non-BPs avoid doing anything to provoke a negative reaction from the person with BPD, at least at first. They may worry that if they assert themselves, they'll lose the relationship and be unloved and alone. And the person with BPD, who is taking care of his own pain in the only way he knows how, can be skillful at convincing the non-BP that she is being selfish, irresponsible, or uncaring. Over time, the non-BP may eventually lose sight of just how far she has gone to accommodate the BP's skewed sense of reality. Pushing the envelope. Without limits, BPD behavior can get drastically out of control. Some non-BPs interviewed for this book have willingly not answered their own work phones because their BP wives were afraid of other women calling, tolerated the BP's multiple affairs, including extramarital liaisons that led to pregnancies and sexually transmitted diseases, or not expressed any needs at all because to do so would lead to accusations of being needy and controlling. Other non-BPs have given up rewarding activities and friendships because of criticism from BPs, lied to friends and family members about the behaviors of those with BPD, tolerated regular physical abuse, gone without sex for more than a decade, not left the house for long periods of time because those with BPD refused to be alone, or allowed those with BPD to be abusive to their children. You may have let someone violate your personal limits in the past, but that doesn't give the person permission to do it again, not unless you hand it to him or her. First, though, you have to decide what your limits are. How limits help the BP. Setting limits can be frightening at first, so it's crucial to remember that you're not setting them just for your own good. When you set and observe personal limits, you are also benefiting the person in your life with BPD. In fact, when you let the BP violate your boundaries, or do not set any for him or her, you may be making the situation worse. Some non-BPs believe that setting aside all their needs will eventually fix the BPs they love. This is not true. George, non-BP. I don't really care about how Kim treats me. Yes, she's done things that have caused me a lot of pain, but thanks to all I've learned about BPD, I know her suffering is so much greater than mine. I like knowing that I'm making a difference in her life. Isn't that what life's about? Helping other people? George's motivation is commendable, but giving up his own needs will not benefit his wife or himself in the long run. If George accepts responsibility,